The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. This is Garner Ted Armstrong with the good news of the world tomorrow. A glittering future is ahead, according to the best predictions of some scientists, economists, industrialists, and the like. A future of scientific glamour, of space travel, weather control, artificial organs, and drugs to even raise human intelligence. At least so they say. But how can you know what is ahead? If you're a college student and planning for a degree, a future, some kind of a job, a home, marriage maybe, how do you base your life, plan your future, decide to marry, study for a degree, prepare for a job, or build a home based upon real assurance for the future? Some of the outstanding predictions of today are truly hair-raising. Dr. John Mee, who was former consultant to the president and now professor of management at Indiana University, took the cover off some outstanding predictions recently when he talked before the Emory School of Business Administration. And he was talking primarily about the practice of what he called mumpsimus. He says mumpsimus is a perfectly good word, you can look it up, meaning persistence in a mistaken belief and dating back to the Middle Ages. Dr. Mee's theme was one that has to keep up every day. The world is moving so rapidly, so you can't let a single day pass but what you read and study and think about what's happening, especially in the field, of course, of science and economy. And he cited these predictions made by the prestigious Rand Corporation after massive research, which undoubtedly would have involved feeding all kinds of alternatives and information into some of these huge computers that are being used today. And here's what he came up with. These are predictions upon which you can base your future, at least so he said. Shortly after 1970, he said, biological agents will be discovered that will destroy the enemy's will to resist. Shortly after 1970, so he said. By 1978, the United States will have occupied ships flying around Mars and Venus to look them over. 1978, 12 more years. Now, that's an accomplishment, and these predictions are pretty definitive. By 1982, he said, there will be artificial organs made of plastic and other materials to replace worn-out body parts. By 1983, there will be drugs that will change a person's personality. So, mothers-in-law and all kinds of people, look out. Now, apparently, this means that divorce would therefore become a thing of the past, because instead of just divorcing to change personalities, you could simply have your present spouse take a pill and presto, change-o, new spouse. Science, by 1989, he said, will be able to create primitive forms of life in the laboratory. Maybe you can have different kinds of pets, amoebas or something, little hairy things on them, anything of the kind. They could create them in a laboratory, apparently. He said the sixth point was that there will be regional weather control by 1990. No more drought, for example, in the Northeast. Snow at the public's will in the South. How you'd get the public's will, how they would take a sampling of it, and whether the majority would agree. Well, then number seven was the whole world will be able to vote in a short period of time. This was very, very exciting to them, apparently, by the year 2000 through automated international machines. The question, and isn't this exciting the way in which this is placed, because we're talking now, apparently, by 1990. This is 1990. And then he said they would ask the question, what do you think of Vietnam? They could ask the question one day, and the whole population of the world could give the answer, carefully tabulated, all statistically analyzed, and broken down any way you want to look at it, the very next day. Well, I'll tell you, if Vietnam is still with us by the year 2000, you won't need to worry about what the world thinks about it. Now, also, by the year 2000, science will be able to alter inherited characteristics, they claim. By 2007, there will be instant newspapers in your own home, rolling out of your own individual machine. You can hear then of all the slaughter, the mayhem, the muggings, the rape, the murder, the robbery, the burglaries, the latest dope addiction, the latest teenage crime. You can hear about all the wars and rumors of more of them, the weather upsets, the natural calamities and disasters, the proliferation of nuclear weapons and everything in your own home by your own individual newspaper machine. Won't that be exciting? Now, number 10, he said, a biochemical will be perfected that same year that will make lost limbs grow back. So if you can just stick it out to 2007, if you've lost a couple of legs or an arm or something, well, you'll be all right, they claim. Now, by 2012, there will be a drug to raise the level of intelligence.
And I'm sure that government leaders are going to be thankful to hear that. He said the human brains and cold computers will be linked by 2020 to further enlarge a man's intelligence. Now, this is a prediction for a brilliant future by a scientist, an economist, a person who has actually been a consultant to the President of the United States. So the economists and scientists are claiming there is a tremendous glittering future ahead for you. But the question is, can you believe it? Can you really know this is the kind of a world that is going to come? Now, none of this says what's going to happen with more and more nations joining the atomic club, the proliferation of nuclear weapons. It doesn't say what's happening as a result of the decay of NATO and the kicking out of other allied forces from France. It doesn't talk about Indonesia, the Congo, divided Germany, Vietnam, the Cold War, the emergence of new power blocks, future supergiants of economy in the world, such as Japan linked with Asia, Germany, and the United States of Europe, when it happens. It doesn't talk about world population explosions, drought and famine, or anything else, but it does say, and let's go back and analyze what it doesn't say. It does say you can expect a glittering, glamorous future. For instance, plastic organs to replace your worn-out ones. Don't you think it would be a far nicer prediction if you could say they'd figure a way so you could keep your own? He says, shortly after 1970, this is the one that really worries me a little. Now, it doesn't really worry me, but in a sense, let's say it worries us because people make such statements and then you hope that they won't come true. He says, by the year 1970, now that's only 4 years away, biological agent will be discovered that will destroy the enemy's will to resist. Then he goes on to talk about what's going to happen in 1978, 1982, 1983, but discovered by whom? And which enemy? What if Russia discovers it first? And if we then have no will to resist, maybe by 1978, the rest of his predictions can't come true because he then says the United States will have ships filled with spacemen flying around Mars and Venus looking them over. Well, that means if prediction number one doesn't come true, doesn't it? Now, if we have spaceships flying around by 1978, looking around Mars and Venus and whatnot, what's to assume there won't be other spaceships from other countries flying around looking them over? And what's to assume the spaceships won't be a little bit nettled by the interference of space-age trawlers from Soviet Russia or something and decide to take a shot at them with a ray gun or a laser beam? Well, that part isn't covered. Then he said, by 1982, there will be artificial organs made of plastic and other materials to replace worn-out body parts. But if your liver gives out between now and then, you've had it anyhow. And wouldn't it be a whole lot nicer if you could keep your own instead of a plastic one? And then he said there will be drugs in 1983 that will change a person's personality. Why, you can change your personality right now without drugs. There's the definite method. Do you disgust yourself? Are you unhappy with yourself? Many people are. You can see these people in drugstores. You can see them across coffee counters. You can see them driving buses, operating elevators, running around New York, Chicago, Detroit, Los Angeles in taxi cabs. You can see them handling people's trunks and baggage at airports and at steamer docks. You can see them running to a bargain sale or pushing their carts up and down the aisles of a supermarket. You can see them in traffic jams. There are all kinds of people that are disgusted with life in general and not very happy with themselves or anybody else. And if you look very carefully, you will agree with me, there are a lot of people that really do need to change their personality, all right. Matter of fact, if you were to take a poll of what people think about many leaders in government around the world and many, many nations, they would assume that even some leaders need to change their personality. And they can do it right now without waiting till 1980s. To find some kind of a drug to do it. Now, regional weather control by 1990, but what happens if the world drowns in a flood between now and then? There is a lot that isn't said here in this rather glittering prediction of the future. Well, now, believe it or not, there is a source to which you can go that will give you the whole picture, that doesn't leave out these vast areas, that does answer the questions, what about the supergiant of industry and economy of the future? What about the proliferation of atomic weaponry? That answers the big question, will humankind survive? Will you still be here in those years if you're young enough to survive until then? that answers the question about drought and famine, Vietnam, a divided Germany, Indonesia, the Congo, nuclear weapons, the Cold War, the decay of NATO, CETO, the rest of it. It answers those questions, believe it or not. It's a source. It gives you the whole picture, the total panorama of human experience as people are living it today. And it answers the biggest questions of all. Why are you alive? What is a human being anyhow? Why are we on the earth? What is the purpose of human experience? Where are we going? Now, that source would immediately be rejected and without proof by the majority of all people. And this is the point I want to talk about in this program and succeeding ones. The total, not inability, but the complete and total rejection of just plain simple facts by vast majorities of people who have been so hoodwinked into believing they cannot find out for themselves that they're simply not willing to look. I say this source, this broad panorama of human experience that predicts the future and that dares to give you the entire picture and to answer the really big questions about the survival of mankind, I say that source will be immediately rejected by the bulk of most people without proof simply because it isn't all that popular. It's not desirable. Even though it admittedly contains good news, final solutions, good outcomes, information to plan your future by, but it's not going to be accepted by most people because they simply have their minds made up in advance. It couldn't say those things. Now, just to take a check, I'll tell you what the source is. It's the Bible. One third of the Bible is prophecy, and you can prove it. But most people won't take the trouble to prove much of anything to themselves. And I want to illustrate that point. People are all too prone to let other people do their thinking and their research for them. And typical college students of today are rather woefully ignorant about certain very, very vital points. Now, nobody can get any more vociferous about international relations and about the economy and about government policies and about anything from the war in Vietnam to the weather than college students. You've seen the little strip, haven't you, maybe, by Al Capp about swine. A group of students he had, bearded characters and dropouts and so on, called swine. Swine stands for students wildly indignant about nearly everything. Swine. And they were parading around with these placards that they were wildly indignant about nearly everything. Well, you hear all these statements by little boys and girls that just barely grew up, and sometimes their voices are still cracking as you hear them quoted over the microphones of newscasters. It's interesting. But it's also interesting how woefully uninformed and how absolutely narrow and limited is the degree of information that has somehow gotten into the minds of some of these students. Recently, an Eastern college submitted its entering class of 500 to a quiz in geography just to find out how much they knew about this round earth we live upon. And the results spoke rather eloquently. 38% of them couldn't find where Alaska was. 40% of them mislocated communist China, of all things. 40%, nearly half. Entering freshman students in college, been all the way to high school, been going to school in and out of classrooms for 12 solid years of their lives. I mean, these kids were shaving by now. They were able to join Swine or any other wildly indignant organization of youngsters. 86% of them could not point to a location within 500 miles of the Rocky Mountains. 28% of them thought the Rockies lay east of the Mississippi. This was an Eastern college. This is how much they knew about the American West. Question is, what does it matter? Well, it matters a great deal, you see, because we're living in a frightening world where we need to know who's what and what's where and what's going on. And a lot of people think Aswan is a Greek name. A lot of people think Vietnam is somewhere vaguely between China and Africa. That's right. People just seem to be uninformed. Yet our age demands that we become informed, informed about everything we can become informed about if it's really important, if it really has to do with up-to-the-minute world conditions and their outcome. Now, the typical college senior has been proved to be woefully ignorant of foreign affairs and world events, and a test on foreign affairs given to 2,000 seniors in 175 major colleges in the United States disclosed a deplorable lack of information. The students flunked the test on the whole, getting a mark of 55%. They could answer about 44 out of the 80 questions correctly. And on almost every count, students about to leave college with a sheepskin or hazy of some of the fundamental world issues. Many of them knew absolutely nothing about American foreign policy except an emotional opinion as to whether they did or did not agree with it. And the ignorance about the international scene is certainly going to prove to be a disastrous handicap to anybody who goes on into public service. College students have been proved know very little and nowhere near enough about geography. That doesn't mean all of them. It means there's a broad majority. It means it's a problem, a trend. And it illustrates the point that people do not use their research references enough, that people don't want to find out for themselves enough, that people like to discuss things they're interested in, pros and cons, other people, present-day conditions, or at least some of the fringe conditions that exist, of which they may know little, and then their emotional and glandular reaction to them. But so far as getting the absolute proof, well, that takes time and trouble. And oftentimes people aren't willing to pay the price. Actually, only a handful of colleges require the study of international relations, and where the subject is offered, only a very few enroll in it. An analysis of the academic records of 1,601 seniors in 34 colleges and universities shows that only 130 or 8% of them had taken a course in international relations at some stage in their college career. And 92% graduated without having ever been exposed to the subject at all. And yet, of course, the older generation looks to the graduating college seniors as our saviors for the world tomorrow. The ones that are going to help us, bail us out of all of our troubles, be the leaders in industry and arts and literature and science and government. But how can they be if they haven't really been told much of what the world is like and the whys and wherefores of human experience today? An editorial in Life magazine summed up what I'm talking about. The idea is that many people think truth is first of all relevant, truth is unobtainable, and if there is such a thing as truth, it must be at the end of a complete labyrinth of an impossible search through intricate and hard to be understood terminology, down a maze of competing, conflicting, and completely contradictory hypotheses and guesswork. And then when you end this fantastic search, you come up with only a bigger question mark, bigger questions, and you haven't really gone anywhere at all. And this is the approach to the biggest questions in life today. The idea that God is dead, the idea about the origin of the universe. Time magazine recently ran a theory, three major theories about the origin of the universe. It came from within, it came from without, it started from within, it's going to without, or it's sort of enfolding upon itself. Nobody seems to know. Take your pick. What would you like to think about the origin of the universe? It would be just as accurate, and you would be able to completely substantiate it and have just as much proof as any scientist with any degree after his name. Would you like to think it just came to be? Well, that's as good as some of them are doing. Would you like to think it actually was and then got exploded and blew up? Well, that's as good as some others are doing. Would you like to think it is just one giant atom and that actually you descend into miniaturization to the point you think we're just actually little tiny particles of a vast explosion that finally wiggled and took shape and formed life and came to be on this earth as a passing phenomenon in the intricate vastness of limitless space, and that actually it's just a little blip in the passing of monstrous 80 billions of years of time, and it soon will all pass away and a new era will come along in the universe? Dream away. Others are doing it, and it looks like it's pretty good to them. They get it published in front page prominence in newspapers, scientific journals, and weekly magazines. So really, if it's just a lot of guesswork, you're able to guess with just about as wild abandon as anybody else, aren't you? Now, in that issue, Life magazine erected its monument to the unknown God. And its God is unknown because its Bible is a frustrating maze, according to the people who have set themselves up as those to explain to you about the Bible. And this is the important thing. The average layman, admittedly, knows little, if anything, about the Bible. But today, those who claim to know about the Bible are telling you the Bible is filled with internal contradictions and crudities. They are telling you it is a myth. They're telling you it isn't true. They're telling you they have found you can't prove anything by the Bible. Or, on the other hand, some say you can prove anything by the Bible. They're telling you Jesus was a myth, or that he died in the tomb and his plan kicked back on him and he bribed almost everybody to do everything possible to make him look like the Messiah. One man summed up the 15,000-word quest that appeared in Life magazine with these words, and I quote, he's a theologian, Rudolf Bultmann. He said, I do indeed think that we can now know almost nothing concerning the life and personality of Jesus, end of quotation. So the layman sits back and sees all the great powers and their conflicting ideas about the Bible, the scholars, the educated people, talking of what they think or they feel about the Bible. And as one man said in summing up all of the pros and cons of the discussion about the article and the article itself, never has it been more clearly demonstrated that modern biblical scholarship is groping in the dark for a light it insists upon blowing out. Now that's quite a statement. Groping in the dark for a light it insists upon blowing out. And so the average layman is convinced you can't prove a thing. And most people have swallowed that idea. They really have come to believe it today. I tell you, prove all things. I say, get the proof. Check the source. You say, what source? What do you mean, prove? You can't prove anything. Sure you can, but when you say that, you're just proving how much you've swallowed and taken for granted what other people have told you. And it's time you quit getting hoodwinked by a lot of pros and cons and opinionated people who try to tell you truth is non-existent, or if there is such a thing, it's obtainable only at the end of a labyrinth of an intricate maze of complex research which only ends with bigger questions and frustration. Now, you know, we like to cover ourselves today. So every time you hear somebody quoted who is supposed to be an authority on a subject, he will say, well, I am coming more and more to believe. Or he or she could say, well, at least in my view. Or they will say, now it's my opinion, or my view, or my idea, or I think, or I feel. But you don't hear people saying, now the facts are, or this is it, or it's absolutely true that, or it's positive that, or it is sure that, because that's not very popular. That's not what people want. Dogmatism, somebody who says this is the way it is and you can prove it, can become just about as unpopular as it's possible to be. Somebody who says, I don't know from nothing and don't think I can prove anything either, but here's what I feel, is usually listened to. And there is an amazing lethargy and lack of interest in the average person to prove anything to himself. Now, the Bible predicted it wouldn't be believed. The Bible predicted people would scoff at it. The Bible said people in this age, in this day, at this crucial, this critical moment in man's experience, would say, ah, you can't tell me the Bible is true. You can't tell me Bible prophecy is true. Everything is going according to a cycle. It's going just like it always did 80 billion years ago. But the Bible challenges you to prove all things. It says in 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 21, prove all things, hold fast that which is good. It doesn't say swallow all things. It says test, try, prove, plumb, probe, get to the depth, the root, and the core of it. Over in Isaiah 8 and verse 20, Isaiah said to the law and the testimony, if they speak, that is, theologians, those who set themselves up as teachers and preachers of the Bible, if they speak not according to this word, it is because there is no light in them. And God himself told a man named Malachi to tell other people, prove me now herewith. And that was relevant to a financial law of his, incidentally. Prove me now herewith if I won't back up my financial laws and pour you out a blessing if you obey. But it's a habit today of too many people to take other people's opinions and make them their own, and believe they themselves are incapable of proving anything to themselves and let others do their thinking for them. It was common back during Christ's day. It's common today. The way to find out all about somebody is ask a friend. So here are two people, both of whom admittedly know nothing, each of whom, of course, have opinions, prejudices, preconceived beliefs, ideas, maybe about the same lack of education or the same amount of education. And in chewing the fat, as you say, or chewing the rag, as people say in the vernacular, or sitting around and discussing or chatting over tea, a certain subject, be it Vietnam, the leader in government, the local preacher, the farmer's daughter, or the truck driver, or the clerk, whatever it might be, whether a personality, whether a point about the Bible, whether an absolute doctrine of God, whether the future itself and the very fabric upon which your life ought to be planned, they can sit and chat and discuss and banter back and forth and come up with a concrete opinion based on sheer nothingness, based on empty supposition, without a fact in the whole framework of the entire thing. You've got to look in your own Bible back in the 7th chapter of the book of John, and I'll show you a whole lot of examples like this in the next program. Moses' example, Amos' example, the example of Jeremiah and others. who had the facts, and they said, here's the way it is, and people said, oh, who does he think he is? He can't know the truth. Back during the day of Christ, there's a historical record. And again, you don't need to believe it just because you hear me read it. You can look it up in your own Bible and find out it's true, and it's just a little bit of an insight into human nature. Here were people talking about Christ during the time he was on the earth. Now, you think that all the discussion is today. The people are bantering back and forth about whether Christ was real or not, whether he was a fake or a fraud, or whether he was really on the up and up. Was he the Messiah, or was he an upstart that tried to bribe a lot of people and make it look like he was? People aren't sure today. Well, that's nothing new. They weren't sure then. It said in verse 11 and 12 of John, the seventh chapter, after Jesus had come rather privately to an area for a feast, and that's something that most people aren't very well aware of, that Christ observed and attended feasts, festivals, annual holy days, or high days, as they were called in the Bible. And here he was, and the Jews were seeking him, saying, where is he? And in verse 12, it says of John 7, there was much murmuring among the people concerning him. Now today, you've got a lot of murmuring among the people concerning the draft, or taxation, or Vietnam, or NATO, or General de Gaulle, or the weather. And whatever it is that people murmur, which means grumble and stumble over and gripe about or complain about or just chew the fat over and hash over in their own chit-chat and conversation, you come up with just about as much accuracy as these people did. They murmured concerning Christ. Some said, quote, he is a good man, end quote. Now, that isn't all they said, obviously. They sat around and talked about it for hours, but that was at least the predominant opinion of a few. They said, he is a good man. Well, that was nice that they were willing to throw him that little compliment. Of course, that wasn't all there was to it, but that was their opinion. Then others said, no, he deceives the people, end quote. Now, did these people know? Oh, no, no, they didn't know. Did they have the proof available? Well, certainly. Dozens of Old Testament prophecies to which they could have gone. They could have gone directly to the synagogues and asked the leaders, let me see the prophecies of Isaiah, of Daniel, of the writings of the Torah, back in the law. What did the prophets say about Christ? When would he come? How would he look? I just finished a series on that not long ago. What would he look like? Would he be an average man of the tribe of which, and where would he live, and what about his childhood? It was all there. The escape into Egypt and return, the time of the attempt to kill the babies on the part of Herod, everything was all there. They could have got the proof. Few minutes research. Could have carefully looked. Then they would have done like John did, and instead of thinking about the personality, asked, what about the works? What is he preaching? What kind of a message? What is he accomplishing? Are there any miracles being done? And are miracles logical? Can you prove it? Oh, no, they sat around and talked about it. So some said, oh, I think he's a deceiver. But the point is, other people believed what they said. Well, sure, old George, Henry, Joe, and Bill were backyard across the fence talkers all the time. And you have good confidence in these fellows because they always have known what they were talking about, whether it was about the baseball scores or a Model T Ford. So we bandy back and forth a lot of opinions. What about proving it for a change, my friends? What about writing in for these booklets I've announced and find out in a few minutes simple research for yourself whether you can demonstrate the Bible talks about the future? You need to write for these booklets on Does God Exist? And the Proof of the Bible, the article on Why Prophecy, and the booklet especially, 1975 in Prophecy, and the one on the United States and the British Commonwealth in Prophecy. These booklets are free of charge. I'll tell you more about them in the next broadcast. Also request the current number of the Plain Truth magazine. It's free of charge, no price, if you send your letter to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.